Often, God's people are not expecting God's action. They say that they want God's action, but they don't really expect it. They evaluate possibilities in terms of their own meager experience. In his youth, Jacob, of whom we read here as a very old man, literally on the very threshold of death, as a youth made his way in the world by his wits and by the able assistance of his mother, Rebekah. He gained a reputation as a deceiver and employed that ability not only on his brother Esau and his father Isaac, but also on his father-in-law Laban. Of course, along the way, his father-in-law practiced one of the grandest deceptions on Jacob in the matter of Leah and Rachel. Along the way in his journey back to his home after 20 years of absence, Jacob wrestled with God. And as a result of that experience, his name became Israel, signifying the power of God's grace in Jacob's life. Jacob was no longer the deceiver, the supplanter, but he became the deceived. His sons sought to convince Jacob that wild animals killed Joseph. Of course, the reality was they had sold him into slavery in Egypt. But Jacob never asked any questions and concluded the story was true. They had Joseph's coat of many colors that they dipped in the blood of a slaughtered animal, and Jacob concluded that his son had been torn in pieces. So he began a 13-year-long period of mourning for his son, who was all that time very much alive. Jacob was inconsolable despite the efforts of his sons and his daughters, who all knew the truth and could have spared their father from all that anguish. Jacob came to accept the idea that Joseph was dead. Now Joseph also, who was not dead, endured a long trial of grief in Egypt. He spent years, in an Egyptian prison for offenses that he did not commit. As the psalmist said of him, until the time that his word came, the word of the Lord tried him. But the day finally came when Pharaoh summoned Joseph to interpret a dream that Pharaoh had. And that interpretation brought Joseph to be the second ruler in all the land, with only Pharaoh being above him. Soon appearing as an Egyptian ruler, Joseph came face to face with those brothers who treated him so cruelly 13 years or more before. At last, word reached Jacob that Joseph was still alive. And when that happened, there was no question that anybody raised as to what really happened all those years before. How was it that he spent all these years in mourning when Joseph was alive? Jacob could hardly believe the news when it came to him, and he refused to believe it until he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent in which Jacob could ride to Egypt. And finally, when he got near there, he saw his long-lost son. It was a blessing for which he did not look, for which he never looked, and which he was sure would never be his again in this world. Now we come to this passage, and as he drew near the end of his life, Jacob visited with the sons of Joseph, and he said that he never expected he would ever see Joseph again, but God had brought him also to see Joseph's sons. Now, there's a quality about this story that is poignant. We see the old man. We know how old he was. He was 147 at this time. And our hearts go out to him. His eyes are dim. He's barely able to move anymore. He's sick of the sickness from which he was to die. And he could reflect that the last 30 years of his life had an aspect to them that he could never have imagined. 17 of those years in Egypt, 13 of those years mourning his son. We can, in our mind's eye, see his face, his lined face, and the tears out of his nearly blinded eyes as he testified to the mighty power of God's grace in his life. He had given up hope, he said, of seeing Joseph's face. And suddenly, he was living in Joseph's company, and he was able to see Joseph's sons. So in this brief passage of Scripture, from verse 8 through verse 12 this evening, Jacob gave voice to the amazing reality of God's astonishing acts. And I want you to think with me upon that theme in the time that we have remaining this evening. Now, the people of God profess, of course, that they believe that God is all-powerful. But really, we can say that they have barely scratched the surface of his ability to act in their favor. We are limited in that which we have learned by our experience. So we judge the possibilities of God's intervention according to our own experience. And so we don't dare to expect anything that will transcend that experience that we have had. You know that to be true in your own life. But the Lord consistently shows his ability to surprise us, because we can't conceive of something happening, we conclude it will not happen. And then God steps in and amazes us again. So we do well this evening to observe the instruction we gain from the experience of Jacob in his own words. He had, for many years, a way, it was his way, of thinking about the present and the future, and the past, for that matter. And his way of thinking left out the operations of his sovereign God. So I want you to look with me at these verses and to consider three aspects of this passage this evening. First of all, let us consider unbelieving conclusions. Unbelieving conclusions. Israel, and it's striking, is it not, that often his name Israel is used in this chapter. Israel, the prince with God, the one who had power with God, said to Joseph that he had not thought to see Joseph's face. That is, he had in his own mind accepted Joseph was gone. A wild animal destroyed him. The word thought, of which we read in verse 11, transports us into the realm of the mind. And the realm of the mind is the context in which we live in this world. Our thoughts are the seat of our action. But the word here has an interesting force to it. In another verb form in the Hebrew, it is the word for pray. The vast majority of the references of this root occur in that form. But in this form that we find here, it has the force of judging or meditating. So the overtone of prayer is still there, because it was more than simple thought that was in view. Jacob was admitting, Israel was admitting to Joseph that he had reached the point where he could not dare to pray that he would see Joseph's face again. He came to the point in his mind where he said, that's it, Joseph's dead. There's no use for me to pray about that anymore. In the New Testament, in the first chapter of Luke's Gospel, we encounter an old man there by the name of Zacharias. His wife, near his years in age, named Elizabeth. He had prayed for a long time to have a son, but they had no child. And he had come to the point where he had just accepted that he was not going to have a son. So he gave up that prayer. But God heard it. So that eventually an angel appeared to him and said, your prayer's been heard. What prayer was that? That was the prayer that he prayed a long time before, when he and his wife were young enough, they thought, to have children. The angel said, your prayer's been heard, Zacharias. Now in this situation, Jacob, like Zacharias, came to accept what appeared to him to be inescapable reality. Joseph was dead. Turn back to chapter 37 of Genesis. Genesis 37. Verse 31. And they, the brothers, took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Jacob said, that's it, he's gone. He's dead. We'll never see him again. And later, he showed that he was living in the light of that way of thinking. If you turn to chapter 42, beginning in verse 29 is the report they bring to Jacob from their visit down to Egypt. They came to report to him as to what they found there. And we read in verse 36 these words of Jacob. Jacob their father said unto them, "Me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." So that Joseph was gone. Now the time has passed. Because by this time Joseph was the second to Pharaoh in Egypt. So more than 13 years had gone by this time. But Jacob was still living in the light of his unbelieving conclusion. Even when the news came, as it did later, that Joseph was alive and was ruler over all Egypt, Jacob showed that he was not willing to give up his thought. The reasoning with which he lived for years. If you look at chapter 45 and verse 24, verse 25, they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father and told him, saying, "Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt." And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. Here was a report that went against what he had lived with in his mind, in his thinking, for all those years. He couldn't accept it. But then they said, "Look at the wagons. Here are the Egyptian wagons that Joseph sent them back in." And when he looked at the wagons, then he said he would accept their report. Not once, if we understand what we read here, did Jacob ever entertain the possibility in his mind that his sons were lying to him about Joseph. He never did any investigating, never did any questioning. All that he expected was that Joseph was not ever coming back. So he said, "I had not thought to see thy face." There's so many parallels to our own experience. And there have been many times when we could have said something similar. We had not thought to see that. We hear the promises of God in the scriptures to move among his people, to establish his work. We read accounts of what God has done in former days, like the days of the Great Awakening in New England in the 18th century. But we have our own way of thinking. And we find it hard to expect that God will do anything like that now. So we don't look for it. We reach conclusions that are governed by our own unbelief. But Jacob's experience showed that what he did not expect, God brought to pass. So against the unbelieving conclusions, we come secondly to divine demonstration. Divine demonstration. Because here in the middle of the passage is the affirmation of God's ability to intervene in spite of our unbelief. Here is the encouraging part of this passage for us tonight. In spite of our unbelief, God is still able to intervene. Jacob had not thought he was ever going to see Joseph again. And yet there he was, not only looking on Joseph, but looking on Joseph's children. So Jacob learned that in spite of his unbelieving conclusions, God was working the whole time. During all those years when Jacob refused to be comforted, when he said, I'll go down to my grave in mourning for my son Joseph. Completely ignorant of the fact that God prepared Joseph for a special task. And it was a task of salvation. And at the right moment, when all was ready, when God's providence had planned everything out, after years of injustice that Joseph suffered, at the right moment, God intervened. And you find that moment described in chapter 41 and verse 1. And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And then this chapter recounts his dream and how it was that Joseph was brought to interpret the dream. That was the right moment. Now, how was it that Pharaoh had that dream? God gave it to him. That was the testimony of Joseph. He said to him, God gave you this dream. And the dream became the occasion, and the interpretation of it became the occasion for Joseph's elevation from the prison, because one of Pharaoh's servants, the butler, who had been in prison with Joseph and who had promised that he would speak well of him, when the time came for him to speak well of him, he forgot him. Well, he didn't forget him like we forget to do some task we're supposed to do. He just said, you know what? I spent all this time in prison and now I'm back in the good graces of the Pharaoh. I'm not going to bring up the case of another man I met in the prison. But now, when he thought it might be helpful to him, he said, I don't know how I forgot this, but I remember now there was a man in the prison who could interpret dreams. So Joseph was brought. Before, he had spent 2 more years after the butler left the prison. 2 years. It's easy to say 2 years. When you every day you're hopeful that today might be the day that the butler makes his report to the Pharaoh and you get released from prison. But for 2 more years he was in the prison, so despair was deepening. Hope seemed bleak. But then God intervened. And that is always that divine demonstration, the pattern of our God. He brings us to the lowest point. We conclude it can't get any worse. Our expectations are at the bottom. And then he intervenes. And Joseph testified to his belief in that working of God. If you look at chapter 45 once again, and looking at verse 4. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. So Joseph testified to his belief that God was in all the circumstances, even though they were very distressing. And later, after Jacob died and they had his funeral, the brothers made up another story. You'd think they would have learned by this time that deception was not a good course to follow, but they made up another story and they said to Joseph, you know, when our father was yet alive, he said to us that you should not treat us badly. And what was Joseph's response to that? In chapter 50, we read it. Chapter 50 and verse 19. And Joseph said unto them, Fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. And could we add to that also to preserve then the line of the promised Redeemer, who was, that line was part of that group that was saved by Joseph's intervention in Egypt. So what Joseph understood was that all that happened, including the injustice of the treatment he received from his brothers and from the authorities in Egypt, all of this was part of God's purpose. I say to you, it takes grace to believe that. So Joseph learned not to judge the circumstances by anything but the purpose of God. And in that way, Joseph is a picture of Christ. For even at the darkest hours of the life of Christ, in the Garden of Gethsemane, on the night before his crucifixion, what did Jesus say? Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. He recognized that his impending crucifixion was to be the greatest example of divine demonstration that would ever appear in the world. So when we dare not pray or hope for God to move, the message is he moves anyway. And his move always leads to astonishment. That's the third thing that we find here. Surprising revelation. What did God do here in this passage? He showed Jacob not only Joseph, but his descendants, his sons. Jacob, for years, lived with the assumption that Joseph was not even alive. And there suddenly, Jacob was looking on Joseph's sons. The old man trembled with wonder at that which God did. And even at this point, he showed that he was a prophet of the Lord. For in his blessing upon these sons, in verse 16, he referred to the promised Redeemer, the angel of the covenant, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. So here was Jacob as a prophet. In Hebrews 11, in the passage that we read last week in Hebrews 11, in the morning service, what do we read? Jacob blessed both the sons of Joseph. leaning upon his staff. And he did so by faith. Jacob was about to die, but he was looking forward into the future. So the Lord showed again his power to reveal things that seemed to be impossible. And Paul would later give testimony to that power when he spoke of the ability of God to do exceeding abundantly above all that we can ask or think. So here was the astonishing thing. Joseph was alive. And not only that, he was in a place of power from which he could act to save his people, to save his family. It was an astonishing thing that to Jacob that Joseph had two sons who would each be the progenitor of a tribe of Israel, the tribe of Manasseh and the tribe of Ephraim. So when Jacob felt that all was against him, which he had said, all these things are against me, God was actually moving in his favor. He didn't know it for years. But he brought Jacob to see these astonishing acts so that Jacob could go to death, could go to his grave in the knowledge that the Lord is faithful to all that he has promised. There's nothing we can expect God to do that he cannot exceed. That's the message. I never thought I would see you, Joseph. And yet there he was. And Joseph had his two sons. God has showed me your seed. So Joseph brought them out. We read in verse 12, from between his knees, and bowed himself with his face to the earth. Here then was yet another demonstration of God's astonishing acts. And I tell you this evening, God is still doing astonishing acts. When we think that there's no way forward, God intervenes, and God shows to us again that he's able to do great things. I was looking at a picture that was taken in this very space 8 years ago, maybe to the day, and it was the early days of construction in this facility. And you could see some of the studs and structure of the walls. And that was all that you could see before all dug up and the debris of construction everywhere. For years we prayed that God would provide a permanent home for our congregation. And when you see that again, you say, God is able to do much more than you can ever think possible. We bought a piece of land. That land at 67th Avenue and Paradise Lane. That would be a great place to have a church with an address on Paradise Lane. We bought that land in 2003. And if you drive by today, you will see that it doesn't look any different now than it did then. But we owned that land for a period of 4 years. And then we sold it. And the money that we invested in that land in 4 years went from $100,000 to $500,000. We sold the land to some group, and you can drive by now and see that nothing ever happened there. But that money is what we used to buy this place and to construct this facility. So something where you would say there's never a way forward, the men here can testify to the fact that there were many, many blind alleys that we went down, places we thought, well, this is going to be the place, and then it wasn't. But God is able to do astonishing acts. And if he can do those things in those circumstances, certainly he can do what we need for this time. So may God give us grace to have our confidence in our God so that we can identify with Jacob here and say, God has showed me not only Joseph alive, but his sons as well. These are astonishing acts.